Hello everyone, just a usual quick message at the top of the show to give you 1,000 blessings from the 10 million hands of Vishnu for all of your support for our podcast. A special thank you goes to our newest Patreon donor, Valerie Croft, and to an old Patreon donor, Sif Boynton, who's doubled his money and doubled his donation to $20 a month, which means that you will be hearing Sif's mellifluous Danish tones on this podcast very soon indeed, when he will get his own bespoke episode. Valerie chucked us a fiver a month, and so she is going to get a topic of her choice done. I think we're doing World's Worst Vacation with her, so that's something to look forward to. If you're listening to this either brand new and fresh because you just happened upon us, or you have listened to every single episode and you're thinking, how can I assist the lads, I was going to say through the lockdown, but just generally through life. Well, all the best ways that you can support a podcast. If you've enjoyed the show and want to chuck us a bit of cash like Valerie and Sif did, you can head to patreon.com/worstfootforward, and you can donate from as little as $2 a month all the way up to $20 a month, and you'll get things like free content every month, the ability to nominate a topic for the show, come on and judge the show, or even be a guest on the show. And also, if you become a donor now, we are, I think, 4 or 5 donors away from having to actually commit to working on a book. I mean, everyone else in lockdown, in theory, I imagine, is working away on their sitcom script and novels. Even chartered accountants. And so to avoid having to have narrative, chuck us some money, and me and Barry are going to take some of our favourite stories from the 160 or so podcasts and turn them into the written word. If you don't want to do that or can't afford to do that because you haven't been furloughed or you have a strong regard for your financial well-being but want to help us out, chuck us a review on your podcast host of choice. We're almost at 100 5-star reviews now, I think. So, and those are the only ones that are either acceptable or correct. So pop on iTunes or Castbox or Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. Even now, 3 years into doing this podcast, good reviews help and they make us more visible. Other things you can do, recommend us on Facebook, on Twitter, to your pals, send messages via semaphore to your neighbours across the road that this is how they could kill more time until the Great Plague washes away. If you want to contact us, we're on @worstfoot on Twitter, worstfootforward on Facebook, and worstfootforwardpodcast@gmail.com. Myself and Barry continue to throw more content into the ether that you can watch. Barry continues with his National E-Theatre 4 nights a week, I think, on the YouTube channel of that same name, where he gets writers, directors and actors to write, direct, rehearse and then perform a brand new monologue. And my comedy club, Good Ship Comedy, has transmogrified into the HMS Unprecedented, where every Monday and Friday at 8 p.m. on both Twitch and Facebook Live, we are the world's first and only virtual variety galleon. Last night we had on someone singing black metal sea shanties, an operatic drinking game involving champagne and prosecco, brilliant comedian Sindhu V telling us tales of her lockdown, and Dr. Anna Porshasky, who gave a masterclass on how to swim the channel from your own living room. We've got all sorts of fun variety coming up. And also, if you want to get involved in a pub quiz, every Wednesday at 8 p.m. on my Facebook page, which is just Ben Vanderveld, I'm doing a charity pub quiz, 40 questions. If you win, you get a chance to win a bottle of booze from my booze suitcase. People have won very nice bottles of things like Sulcum Gin or Stolichnaya. Last week, the winner won a bottle of palm spirit from Cambodia that looks and tastes disgusting. And if you win, you also get to choose the charity that we'll raise money for. We've already raised about almost 800 quid for 5 different causes. So come on in, I'll entertain you. I will tickle your trivia glands with the quiz, and hopefully we can raise some money for some good causes. That, I think, is that for this week. So now it's time to nuzzle down in your pod nook of choice and enjoy this week's show with Madison Kobe, all about the world's worst poster.
Thank you. Hello and welcome to Worst Foot Forward, where we celebrate the best of the worst. I'm Barry McStay, and each week I, my co-host and our guest, propose our candidates for the title of the world's worst something. And to paraphrase the words of the famous poster, your podcast needs you. Not as in the case of the recruitment drive to go fight a global war for us. No, no. We realise the only way we can take down no such thing as a fish is via guerrilla warfare rather than a pitched battle. No, we just want you to listen to this podcast and perhaps rate and review us on iTunes, but bring your bayonets just in case. You never know where you might see Andrew Hunter Murray. And alongside me, it is the play to my bill, the poster to my boy, and the blue to my tack. It's Ben Vandeveld.
But not the Prit to your stick or the cello to your tape, because we've got strict rules from our landlord.
That was always funny. They had rules about no blue tack. You're all right with white tack, but not blue tack. Like they weren't exactly the same.
To be honest, that just felt like a psychological warfare from the Guild of Landlords. Like I once had a really long argument with a rabbi about kosher laws, basically being that he said there's no reason for them, and I'm like, what, so they're because God said so laws? And he's like, yeah, exactly, to just prove that you obey him. And I think that the whole blue tack white tack thing, it's just small print to see how much of it you've read.
I have to say, the day someone told me that the best way to remove blue tack was with blue tack, was it like completely shifted my worldview.
That is, you're right, it's a transcendental life hack.
It's like being told, you know, that the sky is orange and you've been wrong your entire life. Did not realise it.
I mean, sometimes, Barry, the sky is orange at sunset.
Don't, Ben, you're messing with my mind. You're messing with my mind, man.
Yeah, this is a conversation that does have not enough marijuana in it to take place.
Did you have a favourite poster on your wall? We've both been students in university and we stick posters on our walls. Do you have a favourite one?
I'm trying to think. So I can't remember the posters I had on my wall at university, but in my room, I remember like when I was like 13 or 14 and thinking I was the coolest kid on earth, getting to go down to London and visit my friends there. And I remember proudly returning with a Trainspotting poster that had the Choose Life monologue on it, and having a bit of a pitch battle with my dad because it had the word fucking in it. And a picture of that, and in a ridiculous psychedelic poster of like Technicolor dolphins leaping in a bubble universe.
That's magnificent. I purchased, there's a famous photo of Ben Hogan, the golfer, hitting a one iron to the 18th hole at Merion during the 1950 US Open. Mm-hmm. And a one iron is a notoriously difficult golf shot to hit. He's miles away from the very small green. And the photo is from behind of him in holding the pose at the end of the golf shot in perfect balance. And you can see the hole, the green far away in the distance. And it's so beautifully taken because you've got him in this perfect poise. And he's remarked upon as one of the greatest, most beautiful golf swings in history. The shadow of him on the grass beneath him. And the crowds lining the fairway. Some of them looking back at him because the ball hasn't reached them yet. And some of them looking away from him because the ball's gone past them and in the air. It's an amazing photo. And he hit the green, two-putted, and then won in a playoff to win the tournament. I had that.
And also one of Hulk Hogan next to it as well.
Also in perfect balance.
Yeah, with the Ultimate Warrior just balanced on one arm, about to be body slammed to the canvas.
Holding a downhill left-to-right 18-footer with the Ultimate Warrior. No, I was going to say the 2005 Irish Times wall planner.
Oh.
Just love a wall planner. And I think that was my first one. They're just fond memories of 2005, back, you know, when we were allowed outside.
Yeah, I mean, wall planners are great. I like, if I ever make it through a wall planner, to just colour in alternate days and imagine that I'm sat in front of a shark with really bad dental hygiene.
Shall we introduce our guest?
Go on then, let's do just that. Our guest this week grew up in Kent, but we won't hold that against her. She was the daughter of an illustrator and went on to study drama at university and thrums with creativity in everything that she does. She works primarily as a designer, working first with Ghost Design, who taught her to design book covers for the likes of HarperCollins, Bloomsbury and Atlantic. She then expanded into retouching photography for John Carey, who I believe was the last but one Archbishop of Canterbury. She remained there for a couple of years before going on to train in acting at Lambda. But after that, she decided, oh, she does not like people staring at her. So she went back to designing posters and the like for theatre and film. Some of her most notable posters have been for Edinburgh Festival production Catching Comets by Ransack Theatre, which won the award for best poster design. But more importantly, she has designed posters for my own beloved co-host's plays Vespertilio and The First. It's a delight to welcome onto the show the perfectly designed, via millions of years of evolution, so fuck you creationists, Madison Coby.
Hello.
Hello.
That was really good. That was very good. I want you in my house all the time to announce me as I go into each room.
Yeah, this podcast is terrible stories, but excellent heraldry.
And the thing is, you can team up. Ben could do the words, and then you can present yourself looking the most graphically pleasing you can do. To get between the two of you, you could do the words and the pictures.
I think I'll stick with the pictures.
I read so many reviews of people, famous people, talking about musicians or comedians and when they or actors, and when they were little, thinking that it had to be a special person who went away and learned to do that. Little Jimmy Smith from Leeds would never think that he could go on and become an actor or a comedian or whatever. But with posters, it's so easy to forget the designer behind them, but they are such an iconic and impactful part of our life, aren't they?
Yeah, massively. I'm a little bit sneaky nowadays, and I always work my way into some sort of credit in the program, which doesn't usually happen with designers. But I think it actually depends, because if I'm not proud of the poster, I'll just be like, no, it's okay, I'll remain nameless. But
sorry, I thought you were going to say that you do an Alfred Hitchcock and sneak yourself into the poster. Just a little shadow of Madison.
I haven't yet, but there'll be time. There'll be time. I'll probably work myself in as a troll somewhere.
If we remount Vespertilio, you can be the face of the bat on the poster.
That won't be a good bat. Yeah.
Can you just have yourself just popping out of an egg, out of an Easter egg in the corner?
I'm always fascinated by people who draw and can create and stuff like that, because so many of the like great illustrators, particularly cartoonists, I think of like someone like Gerald Scarfe or Quentin Blake, they're so distinctively themselves. And like, there's not what just in the same way that certain writers have a voice, there's the most distinctive ones, just they're so striking. I'm someone who's very verbal, to be able to be not only visual and create visually, but to do it in such a striking and unique way as so many people are able to do, just it astounds me.
Yeah, it's a difficult road in the industry, because you have to decide whether you're an artist who values versatility, or if you want to really stick with your style, because people like to know what they're buying into. So it is a battle that I have, because I don't personally believe I have a particular style, but a lot of the artists that I admire do.
What you're basically saying is, do you want to be Blur or Oasis?
You definitely don't want Blur if you're designing posters.
Very good.
Thank you. Well, listen, we've learned that you're very good at creating visual imagery. What are you worst at in the world?
Interviews. Is that an acceptable answer? Probably, you're probably wondering why I'm here in that case. And I was thinking about it, because I'm actually really bad at a lot of things, many, many things. It was hard to cancel it down. And the reason why I do interviews when I'm asked is because it means I can keep consistently bad at them. But if I don't do them, I'll get a lot worse. So this is my way of keeping consistently terrible. And not getting any worse.
You decided to come on a podcast about the worst things in the world to do that. I'm so pleased.
You are most welcome. You get to see me at my worst.
We're here to stop you scraping through the bottom of the barrel, just to keep you scraping it.
Yeah, please do. Thank you. There have been times I was in a play last year, and the BBC came to interview a couple of us, and usually we were partnered with Alex in the play, who was very good with his words, and you could rely on him to say everything. And then me and this guy called Ashley, who were both bad with our words, got partnered together to be interviewed by the BBC. And they were like, okay, so well, you'll be able to see it at 6 this evening. I got to 6 that evening and they cut us completely.
I mean, obviously, you know, I'd want to say the world's worst poster is anyone's mum on Facebook. But, you know, what's that mum? The Labour Party are building 5G pylons that are going to incinerate swans in Norfolk. Of course they are. Maybe hang back on that share button. but I decided to start off having a look at, like, iconic pictures, posters that often end up on student walls. So, you know, that picture of Einstein sticking his tongue out?
Mm. Yes.
Yeah, so it was basically, it was because the thing people forget about Einstein is he was a proper celebrity. People couldn't really understand what he was going on about a lot of the time, but he was, so when I say he was a proper celebrity, he had to deal with photographers constantly going, Albert, give us a smile, give us a smile, like he was a catwalk model. And apparently it was the end of the day, he was getting in the car, he was bored of being asked this, so he just turned around and flashed them his tongue out. And he loved the picture so much, he asked for it from journalists, and he cropped his head out, made several copies, and sent the picture in greeting cards to his friends.
That is amazing.
Another picture that I looked at was the very famous picture. If I was to say to you, Athena posters, which image would you be thinking of?
I know what this is.
Athena posters.
Yeah.
This is the tennis girl.
Correct. It? Yeah, Fiona Butler. It's the girl scratching her bum bum. The photo was taken by Martin Elliott, and Fiona was his girlfriend at the time. She didn't actually play tennis regularly. Yes. And she was wearing her dad's plimsolls and using her dog's tennis balls to scatter around the court. So Elliott sold the image rights to Athena, but retained the copyright and earned about $250,000 in royalty payments. Fiona Butler did not receive any money whatsoever.
No.
Yep.
In fairness to her, she said she wasn't bitter about it in an interview, which is to her credit, but also she definitely should have gotten some.
She absolutely should.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I still quite like the picture.
Yeah, it's really, I think I've only ever seen, there's a black and white version of it.
Yeah.
And seeing the coloured version of it, the sunlight, and makes it a much more beautiful photo than I remembered it being. It feels less tacky. Also, it's much older than I thought it was.
I think so.
It's from the 70s. Yeah. I thought it was like a 90s creation.
You're right. The coloured version, well, you know, probably had a rebirth in the 90s because of that culture.
I think Anna Kournikova might have done a version of it as well. So,
is Anna Kournikova a tennis player?
Sometime tennis player.
Tennis player, yes. An occasional forehand.
Yeah.
sorry, Kat. That was not meant to be grubby at all. That was perfectly innocent.
Sure.
I spent most of my time researching political posters. Just a couple of quickies, neither of them happy. The first one is a very famous poster in American history. You might recognise it if you saw it. It's called the Clymer poster. And it's a poster that was used in an 1866 election. So, you know, just after the end of the Civil War. And it is, unsurprisingly, horrendously racist. And it was from Pennsylvania, and it was basically, it was a Democrat poster. Democrats, of course, famously the racist party in the 19th century. It was the Republicans that abolished slavery, and it's a picture of a studious, good citizen-looking white gentleman opposite the most horrifyingly caricatured African-American picture on the other side. And these sort of idealized versus racist depictions became known as the Two Platforms poster. And it was to try and convince the voters, and it was a Democrat the Democrats put forward, it was to try and persuade the Democrats to vote for Heister Clymer, who had openly white supremacist policies. And bearing in mind quite how racist America was then, he managed to lose based on the disgust at this poster.
Too racist even for the racists.
pretty much, yeah.
Wow.
Talking of racist poets, Byron, probably. Talking of racist posters, in the 1980s, on the British left, there was a huge cause of Free Nelson Mandela, a campaign that was obviously started by the Specials. and so in reaction to that, there was a radical offshoot of the Conservative Party, known as the Federation of Conservative Students, the FCS, or as they were also known, the fucking cunts. And they made some badges and t-shirts and eventually posters with the slogan "Hang Mandela." Now, I believe that was a really bad joke that got out of hand, but just to let you know, guys, don't think that the right wing can't do comedy. It's them being silenced these days, all 576 of the only right wing comedians on the circuit. the Conservative Party banned the merchandise in 1986 and realised that they'd gone too far. Obviously, not so far that Mrs. Thatcher didn't refer to Nelson Mandela as a terrorist or indeed hang out with genocidal maniacs like August Pinochet from Chile. But, you know, water under the bridge, water tinged with blood. But 10 points, Barry or Madison, if you can tell me which only recently former major politician was the man in charge of the Federation of Conservative Students during this debacle.
I bet it's William Hague.
It was not William Hague.
Ah, I'd lose that bet.
Madison, any thoughts?
I've got zero thoughts.
Did you say only recently gone? Can I have another? Is it George Osborne?
No, it's John Bercow.
Oh wow.
Yeah, in his young days, I listened to an interview with him about this, and he's just like, yeah, in my young days, I was to the right of the BNP. I made some awful decisions and read some awful things as a kid, and now he's, you know, swung all the way back to become the sort of cuddly conservative that we can almost all approve of.
He's practically a liberal icon.
Yeah.
Wow.
Wow.
It's mad,
isn't
it?
Have you designed any posters that you're ashamed of?
I can't say politically ashamed of. That's something that very much, you know, my racist views really don't come into my posters.
You haven't gone for like that. You obviously, aside from the drowned Trudeau posters that you handed out.
Apart from those, yeah, we don't talk about those. Thanks, Barry. no, luckily, no. I've done some posters where. I did a poster for a friend like a while back in my early days when I first started and when I did not have my wits about me, and it had like a three character silhouettes going across a bridge, and I hadn't really noticed at the time, but where one of their arms was part of the silhouette, it just looked like a massive penis. But none of us had noticed for ages until it had all gone to print. It was all over like theatre walls and stuff, and I'll send you a picture of it because I don't think it's online anymore, thank God. But that is one that I could definitely go into hiding for a while, the big penis poster.
I love a brilliant comedian Desiree Birch sort of took that idea and ran with it, and she it's a few years ago now, her Edinburgh Fringe poster was a portrait of her, but if you looked at it a little bit more closely, the image was made up of every dick pic she'd ever been sent.
That's so good.
Yeah. That's such a good idea.
Yeah, she's an absolute fucking queen.
I love it. I love it so much.
Oh, I kind of got it. I didn't come up with that myself.
I had to look at some wartime posters, which is where I'm going for my suggestion. There's so many that look sort of like a little bit bizarre in tone and outdated. There's a great one from America where there's a picture of a gentleman straight out of Mad Men And right next to him is like a white chalk outline of Hitler sat in the passenger seat. And it says, when you ride alone, you ride with Hitler. Join a car sharing club today.
Whereas nowadays you're meant to drive, if you're driving anywhere, driving your own, no carpooling. So presumably if you carpool, you're carpooling with Kim Jong-un.
Yeah,
is now the yeah,
I mean, listen, I would love to see James Corden or Jerry Seinfeld present that.
Carpool karaoke.
Very good. Comedians get coffee with dictators.
Yeah.
The other one that's mad, I'll pop it on the Twitter feed. There's one from Nazi Germany. Now, obviously, the vast majority of posters from Nazi Germany, we're not going to talk about because you've all done GCSE and they're full of horrible depictions of my granddad. And although there is one I want to talk about.
Little did he know when he started life modelling where he would end up. He met a young Austrian artist in a class in Vienna in the 1910s. He said, "Stick with me, kid. We're gonna start painting him in watercolors of him playing badminton, walking away from the canvas."
Though you're gonna say Hitler said, "Stick with me, kid, and you'll go places." Little did my grandfather know quite what places he'd end up going to.
Oh my god.
Anyway. Back to Nazi Germany. The Nazi one that I find so hilarious, it says in German, Schäm dich, Schwätzer, which means shame on you, chatterer. And the picture is of a man walking out of a factory, but instead of a head, he's got an enormous duck head. It's so odd.
Presumably that's their version of Tittle Tattle Lost the Battle. Like,
yeah, and careless talks costs lives.
Yeah, but are ducks notorious for, for their involvement in the German Secret Service?
Well,
we've got some quack agents on the job.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God, that picture is amazing.
It's mad, isn't it?
That's so good.
What really strikes me about these pictures is, like, I'm torn because on one side I'm taking the piss out, and then the other side of me goes, "God, that's quite a nice style, actually. I might use that as a reference."
Yeah.
They're all drawn really well.
Yeah, that duck has got a really buff human body as well in that image.
Yeah, he's clearly not on the bread anymore, is he? He's on a no carbs diet.
Yeah.
But my suggestion is going to come from British propaganda. I started off by looking at probably one of the most famous posters of all time, which is from World War One. It was the "Your Country Needs You" with Lord Kitchener and his wonky moustache. Well, and it wasn't initially "Your Country Needs You." It was just it was originally meant to be "Lord Kitchener Needs You," but he was so well recognised that it was literally just his picture with the word "Wants You" below him. And it's considered by many to be perhaps the first celebrity endorsement.
Of war.
Of war, yeah.
"Listen, Lord Kitchener, my name is Mars. I'm the god of war. We're looking for someone to be the friendly face of what I'm the deity for. We thought the mustache really works. We're just going to have your face all over, you know, posters, milk cartons, maybe some commemorative plaques and coins. We give away toys with your face on them in cereal boxes."
Oh, I'd love a Lord Kitchener Pez dispenser. Or is that what they'll have called the mortars and machine guns? Just have a little Lord Kitchener mouth.
Yeah.
He was idolised at the time. He's a big man, 6'2", and he was seen as being iconic of late colonial warfare. He was a hard man in war. He'd won the Second Boer War with scorched earth tactics, and that image was the image that the British thought was feared by the Germans. And it's such a famous image that it has been adopted by so many other countries. There's another British World War I poster that has got John Bull, the sort of 18th century icon of Britishness, you know, big burly man wearing a Union Jack waistcoat and white jodhpurs and a top hat with a cane, looking for all the world like a UKIP voter. Just pointing out, going, who's absent? Is it you? There's, you know, there's the Uncle Sam one, but also there's, it was used by the Daughters of Zion, who are an international organization in America to try and recruit people to the Jewish regiment. The Reichswehr, the new German army in 1919, they used it. The Soviet Union used it. The Russian White Army in the Russian Civil War in 1919 used it. But my favorite person who used it was Smokey Bear. And
is he the forest fires guy?
Correct.
How did you know that?
Just my exposure to American culture. It's probably embedded in there somewhere. Don't know why.
Yeah, so this, and I didn't realise how big a part of American culture Smokey Bear is, but he's huge. And there was an original bear that he was based on, and when that bear died in 1976, his remains were returned by the government to New Mexico. And
he was buried... he cremated? Walker's least favorite flavor of crisp.
Cremated bear.
Smoky bear.
Yeah, he was buried at the Smoky Bear Historical Park. There was even and there's a plaque on his grave that reads, "This is the resting place of the first living Smoky Bear, the living symbol of wildfire prevention and wildlife conservation." The Washington Post,
the first living Smoky Bear, so like he's resurrected.
Yes, well, he's like the Buddha, that when Smokey Bear dies, he's resurrected in a cub elsewhere.
There's a Dalai Bear to go with a Dalai Lama.
Yes. The Washington Post ran an obituary of him, labelled Bear. It mentioned his family, including his wife, Goldie Bear, and his adopted son, Little Smokey. The obituary noted that Smokey and Goldie were not blood relatives, despite the fact that they shared the same last name of Bear. But my suggestion is going to be a different wartime poster, and it is going to be an extremely famous one that you'll have heard of quite a lot. It's the Keep Calm and Carry On poster.
Yes.
Now, this was originally produced by the British government in 1939 by the Ministry of Information. This is the real world, not 1984, ladies and gentlemen. Almost 2.5 million copies were printed, and they were obviously to try and enhance this sense of the stiff upper lip in preparation for the war. And they were part of a series of three posters. The others read, "Your courage, your cheerfulness, your resolution will bring us victory." And the other was, "Freedom is in peril. Defend it with all your might." You know, snappy stuff. Memes for your nana. And although they were printed literally in the 10 days before war was declared, and they were not sanctioned for immediate public display, and it was decided instead that the copies should remain in cold storage for use after serious air raids, you know, to sort of like pep up morale, and they were kept in cold storage until
that feels a bit like sort of the bolting the door after the horse is bolted. Close the door. Keep calm. Don't worry about the bombs that have killed several of your relatives and neighbours.
Yes, keep calm, you say to people with actual shell shock.
Yeah.
And they were kept on ice until April 1940, but then the stocks were pulped as part of a wider paper salvage campaign. Very, very few were kept, and, well, there are two stories here. I'll tell you the one that I've read and the one that I have heard elsewhere. In 2000, Stuart Manley, who was the co-owner of a bookshop in Alnwick in Northumberland, was sorting through a box of second-hand books, and he found a Keep Calm and Carry On poster. They framed it, hung it by a cash register, and it attracted so much interest that he began to produce and sell copies. In late 2005, the replica posters were featured in The Guardian, which raised their profile further. And the design, you know, became as commonplace as it has done today. And I think it's the worst poster for two reasons. Firstly, because I am I find the United Kingdom's obsession with World War II and stiff upper lip and the idea that we won it all on our own with our hands tied behind our back tedious, going on cultish, not least the way that it is currently informing the situation with which we now find ourselves in. We do need to get over the fact that the war was 75 years ago, B, pretty much none of us fought in it, and C, it wasn't us that won the war, it was big American bombs and about 18 million dead Russians, but that doesn't look as good on the side of a mug. And the other thing as well, the way that the Keep Calm and Carry On has just been used as an icon of late stage capitalism, that meme has now found itself everywhere. So there's t-shirts with it that say now panic and freak out, or ones that say keep calm and have a cupcake, twee little smug look, or keep calm and call Batman, keep calm and switch the linelets, keep calm and maintain your temper whilst looking at all the keep calm and carry on posters. It's so inane. And the worst of these was in 2012, McFly, the pop rock aberration, went on a tour entitled Keep Calm and Play Louder. It's so awful. The alternative story of them that I heard is that, and I think I might have heard this from someone in the military when I did a military gig, that it wasn't this chap in Anik who rediscovered them. It was someone who worked for sort of in military intelligence, and that they were deliberately released back into the public consciousness in the wake of 9/11. And they were intent because people were feeling so unstable and so terrified of the thought of international terrorists. And they thought, right, we need to counteract this psychologically as well as militarily. And so they were released back into the public psyche around about after 2001, and
they found a breeding pair of them.
And that's very plausible, but also that I do feel that they're one of the unexpected aftershocks of that has been a surge in nationalism that's serving us oh so well right now.
as well as which the font on it is really quite aggressively like plain, isn't it? I think the original font is Caslon Egyptian, apparently, but apparently,
of course, it's a country that we occupied
used to own, yeah. But it's quite a difficult font to find in a digital format, apparently, so it means that lots of the derivatives of the Keep Calm and Carry On stuff use awful sans serif ones like Avenir, which is one of the worst fonts. Yeah, Madison is shaking her head. She never sans serif fonts at the best of times are very intimidating, but particularly Avenir.
Well, yeah, I mean, the worst version of this poster is this poster on a St. George's flag in Comic Sans.
Or papyrus.
Yeah.
I went through a lot of bad posters. As we all know, there's many of them. But the worst ones I came to were X-Men. They released an X-Men First Class character poster. So it wasn't necessarily the lead poster of the film, but they were character posters. I'm just popping them to you now. And it's just, I've got no idea who the bloody hell was in charge of these. But it's essentially just a silhouette, a wonky silhouette of either Magneto or Charles Xavier. And then because it's their younger selves, you've got Michael Fassbender's face sort of like blurred out around the edges, stuck on the silhouette of Magneto's crutch. And then McAvoy, also the same thing, his face cut out, stuck on the wheelchaired crotch of Magneto. <Wow. laughs> I've never, ever seen... I've seen some bad posters, but I couldn't find anything worse than this.
That is so, like, high level as well. You think, like, someone... How many people must that have gone past?
Right. Yeah.
And as well as which, they look like budget versions of Krang from the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
I just got so many questions about this. And actually, I started to doubt myself on, like, how bad this poster was, because I thought, okay, so what makes a good poster? And I was thinking, it should be intriguing and unexpected. And it ticks both of those boxes. I thought, you know, it should capture the viewer and make them subconsciously stop to consider the image in front of them. And then I thought, Yeah, that's what the viewer does with these, in all fairness.
I think the problem is we don't subconsciously do it. We actually consciously go, wait a second.
I couldn't find anything worse. I was trying to imagine the designer. I was thinking, okay, well, like, is it a freelance design, or do they have, they must have in-house people that they do with, like, each production company. And I just thought the only designer I could imagine was Wolverine with his blades out with a Wacom tablet trying to draw, but can't. And then Magneto comes in to make it worse. And, like, the magnetic pull of his blade sends him flying from one end of the room to the other. And this is what he ends up with. Because no other explanation.
The lovely thing is that you can look at it and go, clearly they do not have the image rights to Sir Patrick Stewart and Serene McKellen for these posters. So they've had to use silhouettes of them. So you can't see faces or any like details like that.
But they don't even seem to be like head-on silhouettes. Like if you look at Magneto's silhouette, it looks like it's been warped slightly.
There's a famous poster, I think maybe from Logan, which has, it's a hand of Wolverine with the claws out,
yes,
holding a child's hand.
Yes. But his
hand is enormous.
Yes, his hand's enormous, but then also they've done like, the people have done little drawings of it without his hands to figure out how long the child's fingers are. And they're really abnormally long, and they only bend right at the fingertips.
Yeah.
So it's really, really stretched. There's been so many like that. If you look at, I think, what's it called? Ready Player One?
Yes.
Yeah, there's a poster of him climbing up a fire escape to the left of the poster, and his leg is unbelievably long, and it's obviously been photoshopped. And someone claims to have figured out the actual measurements of it and been like, no, it is right, it just looks wrong. But I think, I'm just sending it to you now.
Oh my God, I've just seen it.
Yeah, even if it is correct and that was the actual photo, surely it is the designer's job to make it look correct. Because you cut out a picture and you put it in a different situation.
Yeah, he looks like he's on stilts.
Just the longest leg of all time.
And the off-putting thing about that one is because his other leg is like bent at the knee because he's climbing, it looks like he's got a completely normal left leg. And he's just got this like flamingo leg for a right leg.
It's bizarre. One of my favourites ones, I will stick with the X-Men as my nomination, but the Shaggy Dog with Tim Allen.
Which is an abomination of a show as well.
Unbelievable. To be honest, there's nothing good about it in any way. Except for Tim Allen, because I can't slag off Buzz Lightyear.
Really, even though he's quite a right-wing Republican?
Shh.
Sorry.
Toys don't have politics.
Yeah. You strange, sad little man.
Let's be honest. Buzz Lightyear is probably a libertarian.
Yeah. but if you look at the Shaggy Dog poster, I don't know. I've only seen bits of the film when it's on like a Sunday and kids are watching it. I've never seen the whole thing. It's not worth watching the whole thing. But the dog, when he turns into a dog, has normal dog eyes. But for some reason, for the poster, they've decided to take Tim Allen's eyes and put them on a dog.
Oh my God. That is... That's really off. It's like the... How old is that film? It's... What?
2006.
So it's just at that point where they're starting to experiment with CGI, where CGI cartoon characters are slightly being matched the facial expressions of the actors who are playing them as well.
Oh, sorry, I took a moment to Google that. That is, those eyes that there's are haunted.
We can only assume. They've also given them really sexy eyelashes, I've just seen. But we can only assume that Tim Allen has been cursed by some sort of witch.
Well, why is it that Tim Allen's niche is transformation morality tales?
Do you think this is the sequel to the Santa Claus, where actually the fur that was growing as a beard has now completely encased Tim Allen?
Yes.
He's gotten so deep into character they cannot now strip him of any fur on his face. That is amazing. Do you know what bugs me about film posters? It's when there's like a lineup of the actors in the poster and then the names above them are not in the same order as the people who are on the poster.
Yes.
Because obviously, yeah. I think that because we read left to right, they'll put whoever the big name is on the left of the poster.
Yeah.
But then the poster below, if they're the lead character, they're often in the centre. And if it's, say, three people, three names and three images below it, the names don't match up. It drives me bonkers.
It drives a lot. There is a YouTube video on it and it explains the reasons why that is the thing. And you're right, it's all to do with politics of big actors and money and stuff like that. And usually one of the biggest paying actors is always at the end as well, because they like that and blah blah blah, kind of like a drum roll.
Yeah.
But it, for every graphic designer, it is a huge pain in the balls. no one enjoys that battle.
Do you know what poster? Obviously, they're a classic film, but like Vertigo is one of the classic film posters that you get, and The Godfather and things like that. Pulp Fiction has kind of endured a little bit. But the original ones for the Star Wars trilogies, they seem to be that must have been that style of like the different faces and various sort of imagery from the film, but not necessarily taken from the film themselves. That style must have existed beforehand because it feels so classic, but they seem to have defined it so much.
Yeah, I think... well, I mean, there's a massive artist in Hollywood called Drew. I don't know how to pronounce his name, so I don't want people to crucify me for this. But Drew Struzan, and he did all Back to the Future and a lot of the Star Wars things. And he was, because his artwork is so amazing and he works so quickly, he comes up with he often releases his concepts as well in his books and things like that. And he did kind of. I guess it did exist and he will have been influenced before, but in Hollywood, he was really the key person for this sort of style.
Wow, you Google his name and he's got the Harry Potter ones, that style of like the various heads, the Ready Player One.
Yeah.
I don't think that's his, but I think it's inspired by his style. I'm just looking at various Google images and they're going, that's his style, that's his thing.
Yeah, yeah, it's massive. And it inspires a lot of... the alternative movie poster world is massive. It's kind of where I'd like to be heading, but I keep getting distracted by paid work, which pays my rent. which is lovely and it's great, and you can be original and creative in your own way. But often, if you want a good movie poster, it's 9 times out of 10 not the original poster used to sell the film. It'll be all of the alternative movie poster artists come up with amazing stuff, and it always astounds me how they don't use that artwork when you've got that many artists out there who can do that many things, and they come up with X-Men First Class.
Maybe that's the guy who's put paid to all of the sort of additional movie poster guys' chances. They just kind of, yeah, okay, we gave you this one job, you ruined it for all of us. Because movie posters are so formulaic. I've just seen Drew Struzan did the poster for The Thing as well, I think, which is that amazing one of the figure with the light coming out of their face.
Yes.
What do you call it? So many movie posters are so formulaic. Like the typical rom-com one of the two people with their backs to each other, pointing at each other, like in This Guy kind of fashion.
They are my favourite.
I mean, really, what for the Shaggy Dog one, I'd want it to be like Tim Allen and then a dog back to back.
I found a poster by French fashion house Marité and Francois Gribeau of a group of women wearing their I think is their casual chic line. And they're arranged in the Last Supper sort of setup.
Oh, great.
It's amazing. It's a version of almost entirely female cast. It's angelic women posing at this long table like Christ and the Apostles. And there's one man, John the Apostle, sitting on a woman's lap, his torso bare with low rider jeans. And of course, in Milan, it was banned. It was all over billboards in New York and Paris, but in Milan, where the actual Leonardo fresco is, the authorities banned it. They said the Last Supper, this image inevitably recalls the very foundations of the Christian faith. This inevitably recalls the very foundations of the Christian faith. This kind of image with a high concentration of theological symbols cannot be recreated and parodied for commercial ends without offending the religious sensitivities of at least part of the population. One of the women apostles is kissing the naked torso of a man, which just makes the imitation more offensive, as does the use of Christian symbols like the dove, the chalice, and the position of the fingers of the female Christ. The company said the image was not offensive but a tribute to women, saying it was inspired by Dan Brown's bestseller The Da Vinci Code, in which it suggested that the figure of John in the Da Vinci painting is actually Mary Magdalene as a woman. So they flipped all the genders, if you like. They've made all the rest of the apostles women, and John is now a man in this poster. I looked at another film poster. You know the film Arrival? Amy Adams?
Yeah, it was Amy Adams. I know the story. Carry on.
Yeah. So there's one of the posters for it. I think there were several of them, the similar sort of theme of the big ships from Arrival, which looks sort of like half a sort of a American football float, a big black half American football floating in the sky above different world cities. And they had one of them in particular hovering over an Asian city. What Asian city? Look at the skyline. You think, yeah, it's Hong Kong if you look at it. Apart from the tall building at the front right, with the sphere at the top of it, because that's Shanghai's Pearl Tower.
Uh-oh.
They had created a poster...
Well, you know, all Asian cities look alike.
It's all the same!
Exactly. apparently, there was so much anger in Hong Kong about the poster, it was removed and corrected less than 24 hours after they'd released the poster.
They had to release a public apology, didn't they?
Yeah, yeah, exactly, which is more than can be said for some people with their... advertising missteps. In fairness to them, at least they acted fast. I looked at other famous iconic posters. Ben, you looked at the tennis lady. Can you think of any other sort of iconic student wall posters?
Che Guevara.
Yeah, we talked about this briefly on our podcast about the World's Worst Revolutionary. The famous Che image of the red back and the black silhouette and the yellow star on the hat. That's based on a photo called the Guerrillero Heroica, which is a photo by Alberto Corda. It was taken of Che when he was 31, and it's at a memorial service. The actual photo is at a memorial service for victims of an explosion. And then the photo was taken by an Irish artist, Jim Fitzpatrick. He used it as the basis for his stylized posters. So Fitzpatrick said he got a copy of the poster, of the photograph rather, from a Dutch anarchist group. And he said, the first image I did of Che was psychedelic. It looks like he's in seaweed. His hair was not hair, it was shapes that I felt gave it an extra dimension. That was the image I produced for the magazine, and that was done before he died, and that is the important thing about that image. At first it did not print, it was considered far too strong and revolutionary, when he was murdered, I decided I wanted to do something about it, so I created the poster. I felt this image had to come out, or he would not be commemorated otherwise. He would go where heroes go, which is usually into anonymity. And so Fitzpatrick created, he made a paper negative of the photo, printed one colour black and the other colour red, and the star is hand painted on it, actually, if you look at it. It's very sort of rough and ready. And also, he admitted this much later on, about 40 years later, he's got, in the silhouette, he's got a reversed F in the folds of Che's clothes on one of the shoulders, which is his initial, F for Fitzpatrick.
He's manipulated that.
He's just the way he's just sort of just added it in. He's raised Che's eyes a little bit just to make it look a little bit more iconic, and then he's added in this reversed F on the shoulder. He says, I love the picture. Wherever I am in the world, if I see it, I take a photo of it. I always have a chuckle when I see that little F because I know it's mine. And the interesting thing is, he left the image copyright free. So from the very word go, he said he wanted the image to breed like rabbits. He hand-printed thousands of images to give away to free for anyone in London. He got friends to pass them out, encouraged others to make their own versions. He printed about 100 copies at a time because he was fulfilling demand from revolutionary groups in Ireland and France and the Netherlands. He eventually formed a poster company called Two Bare Feet, produced posters in 1967 using the original image of the photo image. And And yeah, that was published in Private Eye. Within a year, at the Listen Gallery, a version of it called Viva Che was presented at an exhibition, which shows how fast it had gone from being a protest image to fine art in less than a year, basically. And yeah, he says he's now since over, he signed it over any copyright of it to the William Soler Pediatric Cardiology Hospital in Havana to support a children's hospital in Cuba. Apparently, Fitzpatrick met Che when he was a teenager. He was a student in Gormanston College and he was working a summer job in a hotel pub in Kilkee. And Che Guevara walked in with two Cubans and ordered an Irish whiskey. And Fitzpatrick recognised him because he was interested in Cuba and revolutionary politics. And he asked him about his roots, and Che told Fitzpatrick that his grandmother was Irish, his great-grandmother Isabel was from Galway, and he had family from Cork. Che later wrote to his father, "I am in this green Ireland of your ancestors. When they found out, the television station came to ask me about the Lynch genealogy, but in case they were horse thieves or something like that, I didn't say much." And then the other famous poster I can think of was was the Hang In There Baby poster. The cat hanging off hanging off the wire or branch or a pole. There are several versions of it. The original poster was a black and white photo of a Siamese kitten clinging onto a bamboo pole, published in 1971 as a poster by Victor Baldwin, who was an LA photographer. He owned a portrait studio in Beverly Hills. He'd photographed Frank Sinatra, Sammy Davis Jr., Ronald Reagan. He'd published books with his wife, with children's books about little Siamese kittens that they owned. And yeah, he eventually decided to take photos of this cat doing the chin-up image. This was used as within the book as well as on the back cover of their book The Outcast Kitten, which was released in 1970. And then fans were writing requesting copies of that particular photograph, so he set up the poster company to start distributing it. And he added the words, obviously, "Hang In There Baby" to accompany it. He hung a copy of the poster in his studio window in 1972, which developed even more interest in it. And he was fulfilling huge orders for it, like 120, 140 units a day. He had to hire staff to keep up with the orders. By 1973, he sold 350,000 copies of it at $2 each. He lived for a time solely on the income for the posters, stopping taking photographs. And he said, "She gave solace and strength to people everywhere in all sorts of trouble, including myself." In 1973, Vice President Spiro Agnew, this is Nixon's vice president, resigned when he was charged with accepting bribes while he had been the governor of Maryland and vice president. And so he was given a poster. He was given a Hang In There Baby poster by a couple of Republican congressmen, signed by 100 members of Congress. And apparently Nixon also was given a copy of it during the Watergate scandal. an original copy of it hangs in the office of Justin Trudeau. That has a bit more credence to it because it was an original belonging to his father, Pierre Trudeau, who'd also been the Canadian Prime Minister. And apparently Baldwin made about $700,000 from sales of the poster, all in all, much of which apparently was used to settle his divorce.
Oh, that is so appropriate.
I also looked briefly at, this was voted the most iconic advert and poster in history in a poll a few years ago. Hello Boys.
Which one's that?
That's the Wonder Bra advert featuring Ava Herzegova looking down at her breasts. from the early 90s. It was, at the time, it was said to have caused car crashes. Because it's just her in her bra looking down at her tits saying, "Hello, boys." So apparently, it's right up there in one of these polls of the most iconic adverts of all time. Second, I think, on the list is Saatchi & Saatchi's "Labour Isn't Working" poster, which was used by the Tories in one of the general election campaigns. And it was used by Thatcher in 1979, and Kitchener's "Your Country Wants You" one was used in came third. Others to a feature were the Health Education Council's image of a pregnant man from 1969, Apple.
What was
silhouettes.
That advertising or warning against? I mean, male pregnancy, clearly.
But... yeah, obviously. I think it was probably contraception. Apple silhouettes from the early iPod adverts. Beans Means Heinz from 1966. And a Greenpeace advert from 1984, the Dumb Animals poster as well. Road safety has been a concern for other lingerie adverts in the past as well. The company Sloggy released a range of adverts with the women in them sort of leaning over in their tight underwear, and apparently they were the company said they were meant to be eye-catching, and they did run them past the Advertising Standards Authority, but the Royal Society for Prevention of Accidents said, whenever these appear, we have received complaints. It happened with the Wonder Bra ads, and it also happened with some of the billboards advertising lap dancing clubs. and in a couple of years ago, I think in 2016, Wonder Bra placed a 3D poster advertising their Full Effect bra, which they said was... their best cleavage enhancer to date. The poster was 20 foot wide and had a Brazilian model, Sabrine Banado, on it. But and it was in near Waterloo, where the IMAX 3D cinema is in London. And it was set out as a 3D image, so it had the sort of blurriness that if you put 3D glasses on, it would appear more 3D to you. But apparently... for motorists who didn't happen to have 3D glasses in their car, according to a spokesman for the Institute of Advanced Motorists, he said, for those motorists who don't happen to have 3D glasses in the car, and most don't, then as the image is slightly blurred, it will cause you to want to focus on it even more. So it was distracting not just for the fact that it was a sexy lady in her bra, but also it would instinctively make you try and focus on it rather than the road.
So your eyes, it's like those paintings where the eyes follow you around the room, but instead your eyes are drawn to the cleavage.
Yes, exactly. Look into the cleavage, not around the cleavage, look into the cleavage. But my choice for the world's worst poster goes to a company called Protein World. 2015, the London Underground saw a series of billboards again with a bikini-wearing woman. With the words, "Are you beach body ready?" alongside her, this advert selling weight loss supplements. It was so upsetting that thousands of people signed a change.org petition calling for it to be removed. The Charlotte Baring, who founded the petition, said, "Protein World is directly targeting individuals aiming to make them physically inferior to the unrealistic body image of the bronzed model in order to sell their product. Perhaps not everyone's priority is having a beach body. By the way, what is that? And making somebody feel guilty for not prioritizing it by questioning their personal choices is a step too far." I remember it. I'm sure you guys remember it as well, being around on. They were everywhere for a while.
Yeah.
And aside from being obviously offensive, you be like nearly accusatory towards people who hadn't, you know, worked up their six pack and tanned themselves in time for summer, it was a really shit poster because it was a really offensive yellow background, and the way the woman was standing just looks really odd. She's got this slightly weird wide-legged stance, and she's just looking down at her the way she presents herself just looks strange.
I have to say, by the way, you are totally right. I am lockdown body ready.
The other thing is, though, that to make matters worse, as we said, some companies do apologise. In this occasion, Protein World did not apologise. Instead, they released a statement which said, "It's a shame that in 2015 there are still a minority who aren't focusing on celebrating those who aspire to be healthier, fitter and stronger. We now run Britain's largest protein facility, selling our products in over 50 countries to more than 300,000 customers."
A protein facility?
Yeah. "Most of them are women. How could we possibly be sexist?"
Some of their best friends...
Yeah, well, some of the people they've shamed into buying their products are women, presumably. They went on Twitter then, someone said, "Surely as feminists, you understand that no one takes you seriously." So they really just went balls to the wall, absolutely non-apologetic for this.
Wow! Did they lose a lot of customers, or...?
I don't know what the outcome of it was, but I can tell you that TfL did decide to remove the posters, with TfL being the transport authority in London. But they said it wasn't based on the complaints, but rather because the poster, which had been up for 3 weeks, had come to its natural end. A lot of the posters were vandalised by various people.
I was just about to say, or too many people had vandalised them, so there's no point in keeping them up.
Yeah. Then some posters started appearing on the tube. It did have the Dove logo on it, and the website campaignforrealbeauty.com was advertised on it, of three, if you like, natural-sized women with their backs to the camera in the same yellow background and font saying, yes, we are beach body ready. So I think very much, you know, got the final word in. Shots fired.
Yeah, I mean, you know when your society has too much money in the wrong place, where there is a an advertising catfight going out on tube poster boards all across the city.
So our candidates this week for the world's worst poster are Ben's suggestion of the ubiquitous Keep Calm and Carry On, Madison's suggestion of the artistically misguided X-Men First Class character posters, and my suggestion of the body-shaming Protein World approach to beach body readiness. Great work all around, and a nice sort of like blend of, you know, source as well. We've got film, we've got the world of advertising, we've got sort of government propaganda. I'm going to discount my own purely because it doesn't deserve any more oxygen of publicity, frankly. But also, it's nearly too obvious. Any of us who were in London at the time were so annoyed by it it was like the topic of conversation for about 2 days, and then passes by. It doesn't seem enduring enough. Madison, you make a very good artistic argument for the X-Men First Class posters, and they are hilarious.
Thank you.
Sometimes on this show, we need to tear down the big boys. We did it when we did World's Worst Board Game. We just said, fuck it, it's Monopoly. Doesn't matter how racist any of the other games we are. it's just Monopoly. And I feel like Keep Calm and Carry On is the Monopoly of posters. In the same way that Monopoly has spawned about 600 different iterations of different cities and brands and film franchises, Keep Calm and Carry On is no longer just Keep Calm and Carry On. It's Keep Calm and Be a Vet. Keep Calm and Use a Ukulele. Keep Calm and Keep Calm. They spawn.
Inception of Keep Calm posters.
Exactly. Just everywhere. It's the route one approach. It's the, you know, kick it from the goalkeeper up to the big man up front approach to making any sort of souvenir merchandise nowadays. So I think it's time we confined that to the dustbin of history. So congratulations, Ben. Keep going.
Congratulations. I would fully agree. I don't know what it is in our society or humanity that seems to want to take something and really run with it for years and years and years in every household.
Yeah.
Thanks. I just let you know that I am celebrating extraordinarily calmly.
from your Keep Calm and Carry On mug.
Yes. Barry, carry on.
Before we go, I have to give you some of the best news of the week. And I love this. This is a couple of weeks ago now, this was. But Dave Eastwood has been building a home for himself and his partner Helen in Honley in West Yorkshire. And it's been 2 years that he's spent building this home. During that time, they've had to live in their garage, meaning that Helen has only had access to a shower, and the 60-year-old Helen has really missed having a relaxing bath. So she's been complaining to Dave multiple times about her lack of a bath. Fed up of Helen complaining, Dave decided to build them a makeshift jacuzzi to, he says, shut her up, using the rusty bucket of a dumper truck in their garden. Dave has turned the digger that he was using to build a house into a temporary day spa for Helen, filling the bucket up with water and shower gel. I'm going to send you guys the link so you can see the picture of Helen as I tell you this. Undaunted by the lack of electricity, Dave created bubbles using a hand drill with a plastering attachment, driving air up into the liquid. And once the water had warmed up, Helen climbed in via a ladder, drinking a glass of wine and soaking herself at length.
She looks terrified.
She said, it was absolute heaven to me. It was really lovely to relax. We've just been using a shower in the garage, so to have a soak was really nice. We've been in the garage for 2 years now. I'd been complaining about the lack of baths, so Dave decided to shut me up. Once I was in there, I didn't want to get out. I stayed in for a good half an hour once I'd finished my wine. We even had some walkers go by while I was in there, and they said it looked nice. We might have to look at renting it out once the house is finished. amazing. So yeah, in these dark times of lockdown, it's nice to find people are finding unique ways of getting out of the house. Madison, before we go, where can people find out more about you and your work?
My website is madisoncoby.co.uk, and I've got an Instagram also, just Madison under the name of Madison Coby. So we're building it slowly, so it hasn't got everything up there yet. But also within lockdown, a lot of my stuff can't be released publicly as of yet, all the stuff I was working on. So you can see that in about a year.
Very, very good. Meanwhile, Ben's off to go play kabaddi while Madison and I get behind him ready for him to scratch his arse. Thank you for listening to Worst Foot Forward. What, bye.
What was that in reference to?
Tennis girl.
Oh. I got
you're gonna be kabaddi boy.
I'm gonna be kabaddi boy.
Bye.
Bye.